Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Matacharian, former NFL scout and now vice president of football and research at Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz, the godfather of football analytics and the founder of Football Outsiders. Shout out to our producer, Justin Stein, as always on the controls. And Aaron, last week was not what we expected out of that divisional round. Always one of the fun games every year.
No, not what we expected when it came to the Baltimore Ravens, certainly.
Yeah, I guess the other games ended up being mostly chalky. The Kansas City game started off looking like it was also going to be completely in the other direction, but that one kind of sorted itself out. And then both of those NFC games that we were looking at, you know, looking at the underdogs in, both of the home teams ended up, you know, exercising that home field advantage and that bye week advantage that you were talking about.
Yeah, it was wild. The Kansas City-Houston thing was pretty wild, but over the course of the whole game, Kansas City was just so much better. But the big thing was the Tennessee-Baltimore game, one of the biggest upsets in playoff history. I know that 538 by their ELO ratings had it as the biggest upset in playoff history. By DVOA, it's not quite the biggest upset in playoff history, especially if you consider sort of the weighted ratings and how Tennessee has played since Ryan Tannehill became quarterback, but it was a pretty huge upset.
I had people asking me things, and I later realized this was kind of Twitter-driven, but like, is this the end of analytics? Is this a bad day for you? Does this result mean that analytics are wrong? It's funny because I never thought that. Obviously, I think the process is sound. If the Ravens gave themselves a 20% chance at winning the Super Bowl this year, that's both six times as much as a 3% chance that one out of 32 gives you. And it's still only one out of every 5 years that you end up winning the whole thing.
We had them over 40%. But we still had them under 50%, so the odds still were that they weren't going to win at all. I think the reason people thought it was the end of analytics was, first of all, that they went for 4th-and-1 twice and failed. And so people could blame their aggressive play calling on 4th down as if things would have been better had they punted. And punted on the first one, I guess, and the second one would have been a field goal. And the other thing is because it was of this idea that the running game won the game for Tennessee, although if you look a little closer at it, the running game didn't necessarily win the whole game for Tennessee. Things like 45-yard touchdowns on play action to Khalif Raymond had a lot to do with the win also.
It was a strong argument in favor of running the football and running the football in January. And I think you and I, and I think the Ravens are kind of built on the premise of that if you can run the ball really efficiently, then you don't necessarily have to be a passing team all the time. That's kind of what they did all year, was zigged where others have zagged and became a 3-tight-end running team with a running quarterback. So it's funny that by going against a running back that is more your standard sort of running game, somehow that would be an argument against what the Ravens have done.
I realize nobody's, you know, if I say based on our numbers such and such, people are going to be like, well, you know, your numbers are tweaked to make analytics look good, I guess. But, I mean, based on our numbers, that game was more about the Tennessee defense and less about the Tennessee offense as far as why Tennessee won the game.
Offensively, that was a shocking aspect, yeah.
Yeah, offensively, that was actually a not as efficient a game as most of the games they've had in the second half of the season. Defensively, it was their best game of the year.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's a good time that we can transition in. We're talking about the two most important games this week, the two games this week, and the first of them on Sunday will be that Tennessee at Kansas City game. And that's kind of where I wanted to start off with you is how did Tennessee do this defensively against Baltimore last week? We kind of both said we would be shocked if Lamar Jackson came out and had a game like he did last year in the playoffs. And then sure enough, that's what happened. You know, I saw Kenny Vaccaro, Logan Ryan, guys that can play kind of hybrid roles, I think were really helpful. Those kind of guys that can play between the hashes a lot of the time and take away a lot of what the Ravens want to do. But I didn't see it coming just with the personnel and with the way they performed on defense throughout the year.
Some of it is, I think, just sometimes people play really well. Sometimes guys just have really great games. And I think that the Titans, especially the defensive backs, Logan Ryan and Adoree Jackson, and the interior defensive line, just had really strong games. They just, some weeks you just wake up on the right side of the bed, and that, you know, it's the sort of random variation that they just had their best games in that game. They also sort of tried to force Jackson to the outside on the read options, and he just couldn't get a lot of yards on them because guys were playing really fast. And again, because just guys just had a really good game.
Yeah, and Jackson ends up with a very good statistical game at the end of the day, and it's not like the Ravens didn't move the ball, but like you said, there are a couple of high-leverage fourth and ones that didn't work out for them. And when some of those kind of high-leverage situations go against what you're doing, you know, that's what the Titans were trying to do. That's why they're trying to shorten the game. And I think here we'll see with Kansas City again, they'll be looking to do a lot of the same thing, maybe even more so, because Kansas City, if the longer this game gets, you look at it like last week, Kansas City, if the game goes on long enough, they're going to score a lot of points, whoever you are.
Well, I think also because the Kansas City happens to have one real big weakness that fits exactly what Tennessee wants to do. Baltimore was not as good on run defense as they were on pass defense, but they weren't particularly weak. Kansas City is weak on run defense. Like, it's a problem for them. They're one of those teams, the rare teams, that actually is bad enough on run defense that it actually becomes a problem because opposing runners become as efficient as passers.
Defensive equivalent of what the Ravens were offensively. So yeah. Efficient running the ball that you actually don't want that.
Henry had his best game until the last 3 weeks, right? His best game of the first 16 weeks of the season was the game against Kansas City that Tennessee won. So what Tennessee wants to do on offense really fits what Kansas City's weakness is on defense. Like last week, it was, you know, oh, I don't know if the Tennessee defense can hold them down, can hold Baltimore down, and they did. This week, it's more the Kansas City offense is going to have to outscore. Like, Tennessee's offense is probably going to have a pretty good game given what they're good at compared to what Kansas City's weaknesses are on defense. So now it's just, can Mahomes outscore them? And I think he can. But that's what he's going to have to do.
He can. He didn't last time. So going back to that game earlier this season, even though the Titans fell behind 10-0 early, they still kept going back to Derrick Henry, and he had a great game. So this was a Tannehill, an early-ish Tannehill game, early November, but the Titans had -5 expected points added through the air that game, including taking 4 sacks on 23 dropbacks against 13 completions. Mahomes, on the other hand, threw 50 times for 446 and 3 TDs, but it was the Chiefs struggling on the ground where, yeah, under 4 yards per carry, but more telling, I thought, was that they lost 10 expected points added on the ground, and their positive percentage was just 36%. So when you take that -10 EPA with the Chiefs running game versus Derrick Henry gaining 12 EPA just himself for the Titans running game, that 36% for the Kansas City run game, the 55% Derrick Henry, you know, and if that's the case and that's how it's going to go, then it's going to be really hard, even if Mahomes throws for another 450 yards.
The other problem was they kept moving down the field and then kicking field goals. And that made it difficult. You know, if they had gone for more of those and they had, or had played better in the red zone, one more touchdown and they win this game.
If they have more of that success on third down, more success in the red zone, or if they had played it more aggressively, I'm with you there.
And the funny thing is that so much depends upon the run, but the game was decided by a heavy passing drive, right? Kansas City had the lead 32-37 when they muffed a punt. They had an aborted punt, not a muffed 30, punt.
32-27?
32-27.
Yep.
And then Tennessee came out. Tannehill went on a run for 18 yards. I'm not sure if that was a scramble or a draw, but the NFL official play-by-play says not a scramble, like a designed run. Then 20 yards to Anthony Firkser, star of the Patriots game, and then 23 yards to Adam Humphries, who won't be playing in this game because he's injured. And that was it, and they took the lead, and that was the game. And then Kansas City got in position to do a 52-yard field goal to tie the game, and it was blocked.
Yeah. So interesting the way that one went down. I think that the Titans would like a kind of similar game script there if they could have it. But it's really interesting. It's really, you know, strength against weakness kind of both ways here. So it'll be interesting to see what can show out. Not too many injuries on the report. I think Chris Jones is questionable for the Chiefs. And then the weather should be 30. I think the high is 32 degrees. I checked earlier today, but no precipitation, not a lot of wind. So besides it being very uncomfortable to tackle Derrick Henry in the cold, I don't think weather should be too much of a factor.
right? Both of these teams, Tennessee is second, Kansas City fourth in offensive broken tackles. Both teams are kind of average in broken tackles per play on defense. So again, there's probably going to be a lot of broken tackles. I thought that was a big difference with Henry in this game against Baltimore. I thought the New England game was much more about the offensive line just road grading some huge holes for him. And I thought that his tackle breaking was a little overrated is the wrong word, just sort of over-discussed from the Patriots game. Against the Ravens, it was much more about tackle break.
Well, one way or another, they got to get him on the ground. Before we switch over to the other game, I just wanted to mention the two rookie receivers that we'll see in this game. John Shirley wrote a great piece today about some of the most impactful rookies that are playing this weekend and some interesting things that he pointed out there. A.J. Brown, they're much more of a passing team when he's on the field compared to on the sideline. So look out for that. When A.J. Brown's on the field, they drop back 61% of the time compared to 50% when he's off. And their ADOT increased by 2.5 yards when he's on the field, not just on throws to him, but on all of their passes. Likewise, Hardman for the Chiefs finished the season ranked fourth amongst rookie receivers in total points. That's really impressive when you consider he only had 30 offensive touches all year and still fourth amongst rookie receivers in total points. So two guys that are really pushing things down the field and can make explosive things happen for these offenses.
I mean, I admit, given the way Tennessee has improved, you know, the way they've played over the last two or three months, I like them to cover in this game, the line currently being 7.5. I still like Kansas City to win, but, you know, we'll get to San Francisco, Green Bay in a moment. I think of the two underdogs, Tennessee is actually the more likely to cover and the more likely to win.
Ooh, I feel like we might have a wager coming on. I feel like if I wanted to take an underdog, I would take Green Bay. So maybe we got to think about this a little bit and think if we can think of something fun for the loser. all right, let's move.
What happens if they both lose and then we're both wrong?
That's probably the most likely scenario.
Neither team covers. Both favorites cover.
Ooh, then we both would have to do whatever the set.
Then we would both be wrong.
All right, we can put that in the back pocket and come back to that one. Let's flip over to the late.
Tell you what, I got it. I'll put dinner and Indy. If one of our teams covers and the other one doesn't, you have to treat the other guy to dinner and Indy. How's that?
Yeah, and then if we're both right, we'll have Corey March buy us dinner. If we're both wrong, we'll buy Corey dinner.
Okay.
okay, we'll keep an eye on that for next week.
Sports Info Solutions is excited to announce the launch of its public-facing site, SISDataHub.com. The new SIS Data Hub is free for all to use and features detailed player pages and leaderboards that provide some of the best information available. In addition to all of the standard statistics, here you'll find proprietary data collected by SIS video scouts, like on-target percentage for quarterback, pressure rates for edge rushers, blown blocks for offensive linemen, and more. You'll also find advanced metrics calculated from all of that data, like independent quarterback rating, total points earned, total points saved, and many, many more statistics, from adjusted blown block percent to positive percentage for receivers, quarterbacks, running backs, broken tackles, air yards, and more. For the most avid football fanatics, a pro version of the Data Hub is also available, which contains everything from the free version as well as filters to split by situation, personnel, and almost anything else imaginable, coverage scheme, run direction, and more. The Data Hub Pro also includes team leaderboards, NCAA data, and the ability to download all data as CSV files. You can register for a free 7-day trial by going to pro.sisdatahub.com.
Let's go to that Green Bay-San Francisco game, which a couple of interesting things on this one. You know, there was all the chatter online about Green Bay being a bad 13-3 team, maybe the worst 13-3 team, and they got out DVOA'd by Seattle last week, even though they won. What did you make of that? I noticed that in the DVOA column this week.
Slightly. I mean, it was a slightly, you know, the idea of that is that going forward, given how they played last week, you would expect Seattle to be a slightly better team than Green Bay. And it kind of goes with how Green Bay has played most of the year, which is most of their games have been a little bit above average, and then they had just three really awful games, especially the one against San Francisco. So if you kind of look at median performance rather than adding all the plays together, they're probably better than most overall metrics think they are, because if you look at how many days were they a bad team, they really were only a bad team three or four times, depending how you feel about the Week 17 narrow victory over Detroit. It's just that they were never really a great team except against Minnesota.
It's interesting. It's like they got lucky, but or they chose the right times to be good this year, because that's the whole concept of Pythagorean wins. And I think they were the worst 13-3 Pythagorean win team ever. And the whole concept is that the amount of points that you score and give up does matter, and it is more predictive than the actual wins and losses. So not a great sign for them, you know, from that standpoint.
They've also been worse over the last two or three months than they were in the early part of the season. But that's because their biggest losses have been in the last two or three months to the Chargers and the 49ers. Again, it all comes down, most of the advanced stats just come down to the fact that they just had these huge, big losses.
All right, let's talk about one of those big losses, and that was when they played the Niners last time. They got crushed in that game. They were way behind in DVOA. I think you said their worst DVO game of the year.
Yep.
And then looking deeper at the numbers, I kind of started looking at some of the EPA in this one. And the numbers showed that it wasn't really that the Niners had an amazing game offensively. They only gained seven expected points added all throughout the air on offense throughout the day. No expected points added lost on the ground, which is a kind of a victory in its own right. So they were good on offense, but the story was really how terrible the Packers were on offense or when they had the ball and what the Niners were able to do with them. They had negative 18 expected points added passing, including five drops on 29 catchable throws. That's just a ridiculous drop rate. And then you get 29% positive plays in the passing game, and then add to that negative 6 EPA on 28 rushes. When looking at the statistics from that day, it was really atrocious on that side of the ball for Packers. I know you were rewatching this one. Does that match the eye test that you saw looking at this?
Yeah, I watched the first half, and for most of it, I thought that the Green Bay defense played better than the 37-8 score would certainly indicate. It's not their fault that, you know, Rodgers fumbled the ball and ended up giving San Francisco the ball on the two. Mm-hmm. They just ran it in on one play, very easy. And Green Bay was keeping San Francisco to field goal. It's interesting, the sort of similar to the Tennessee-Kansas City first meeting, San Francisco was kept to field goals. The difference is Green Bay couldn't score, so it didn't matter that San Francisco was being kept to field goals.
Yeah, and I know a lot was made this year about kind of the pass block win rate and how good the Packers were in a lot of games. I don't know what the pass block win rate stats were for this game. But
this was not their best game on offensive line, but especially because Brian Bulaga got injured early and Alex Light was the replacement right tackle, they kind of took advantage of him.
Yep, and you led me right into it. Brian Bulaga, after nine snaps, came out. Alex Light, on 64 snaps, had nine blown blocks. Now, for context, because I don't know if we talk about blown block totals that much, Zach Martin blew only eight blocks on over 1,000 snaps this year. And we had Alex Light on 64 snaps, had nine blown blocks. Billy Turner also five blown blocks in that game. So this was a really rough showing up front. And as a reminder, a blown block is not a coverage sack type thing. A blown block is when you're beaten by the man in front of you off the line of scrimmage. So really, really tough performance there. Eight of those nine blown blocks for Light coming in the pass game. I think Bulaga would be a really important part of trying to right the ship in this one if the Packers are going to have a chance.
Assuming Bulaga is healthy enough to play, Turner is definitely the weakness of the Packers OL because he's got 32 blown blocks this year and no other Packers lineman is above 18.
It matches the eyeball test there for me. What else are you looking forward to in this matchup?
I think George Kittle roasted the Packers in the first matchup. He was so much of the San Francisco offense, caught six out of six passes for 129 yards and a touchdown. And Green Bay is not great against tight ends. So that's a problem for them.
Yeah, that could be tough.
They're like 24th or 25th against tight ends.
All right. Injury situation in this game should be pretty clear, I think, as far as, besides the people that are on IR already. And good weather expected, 62 degrees, 20% chance of precipitation right now. So it should be kind of cloudy, balmy day. But all things considered, pretty good.
We did discover an interesting stat regarding the injury situation that you sent me earlier today when I asked for, you know, Dee Ford is back, the pass rusher who missed the last 6 weeks of the season, came back last week. But it's really interesting that San Francisco's defensive pressure rate was actually slightly higher, even though their sack rate was much lower when Dee Ford was injured. Their pressure rate was actually slightly higher when Dee Ford was injured than when Dee Ford was actually in the lineup.
Yeah, it's crazy because thank God for pressure rate, because if you just looked at the sack numbers, you would think this is a tale of two different teams when Dee Ford is on the field. They were first in sack rate with him on the field, and they're near the bottom of the league with him not on the field. All of a sudden, you look at that and you switch it to pressure rate, and the pressure rate actually really similar both ways. Like you said, actually slightly higher without him. Again, another guy looking at the on-off splits. If you split Nick Bosa, coming back to John Shirley and some of his rookie stuff, his on-off splits are ridiculous, and specifically in terms of pressure rate. So with Nick Bosa on the field, 38% pressures for the Niners defense, just 24% with him off the field. Their EPA per play, defensively negative 0.13 without Nick Bosa, so that's pretty good. Negative 0.22 with Nick Bosa, that's out of this world, ridiculously as good as the Niners defense had been this year. Yards per play, 4.5 with him versus 5.3 without him. Those on-off splits are the ones that actually end up being impactful, rather than just looking at those Dee Ford games.
I think another thing to look for in this game is the Packers offense is really about two guys at this point, other than Rodgers, which is Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones. So I think watching how they try to keep Devontae Adams away from Richard Sherman is worth watching. Certainly San Francisco has been strong against running backs in the passing game, strong against tight ends, but a little weaker against wide receivers, because if you keep your top wide receivers away from Sherman, the other cornerback's not as good, although I'm expecting that they'll play Emmanuel Mosley instead of the struggling Akello Witherspoon. The other is Jones played only half the snaps in week 12 for some reason. He's played more than that in every week since.
That'll be interesting to look at. I'm definitely curious to see. I think you mentioned that they only threw at Sherman, or they threw at Sherman 15 out of 30 attempts.
They threw that side of the field. I wasn't that counting how many were at Sherman. But you often with Sherman, you can see from the left-right splits where Sherman is, and you can't see from the left-right splits where Sherman is in this game. I didn't go through and count. I will before I write the Football Outsiders preview for this game. You know, just how many times they actually targeted Sherman. I mean, you know, they could be passing on his side and could be passes to tight ends. But the left-right split was even, which I sort of surprised me.
That's kind of interesting there. You'd expect to see Devontae Adams, I think, moving around a lot in this game, playing a lot out of the slot, a lot of motion, just trying to create matchups there. All right. We can move on pretty quickly. Nice quick week with just two games coming up. Looking forward to the championship game. And then next week we'll be back to recap it. Want to thank all of our listeners, as always. Please help spread the word about the Off the Charts Football Podcast by subscribing, rating, and writing reviews. Please tell your friends. I encourage everybody you know to check it out. You can hit us up on Twitter at sportsinfo_SIS, at FB Outsiders, and keep your eyes open for the 2020 Football Rookie Handbook coming in February. I'll be down at the Senior Bowl next week along with a bunch of the SIS scouts, so look out for that. And for my co-host Aaron Schatz and our producer Justin Stein, I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.